Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Annie Fry Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Happy Friday. Welcome to the Annie Fry Show. We're glad you're here. Beautiful day outside. A little warm. Kind of feeling like more of the summer part of September than the fall part of September. But it is a beautiful day outside, and we hope you're enjoying it here in the beautiful St. Louis Bi-State region. Big news taking place this morning regarding the Charlie Kirk assassination. It's kind of... Do you ever have these experiences where something like this happens and then you hear that phrase again, you know, the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and you have to kind of stop and re-remember that it happened? We're still close enough that we are experiencing this once again, and it's devastating. There's no part about this that isn't going to feel devastating. And I think that the country as a whole is going to feel it for quite some time. The fact that Charlie Kirk founded an organization known as Turning Point. There's a lot of people who have been using Turning Point in the discussion about what happens next. And I think it's a very important question, because if Charlie Kirk was taken out to silence him, his effectiveness of communicating and debating and discussing open conversation, if he was taken out to keep his voice out of the fight, can he be replaced? What happens next? We're asking you today, is this the turning point for our country? We've got a few options. Yes for the better, yes for the worse, or no, nothing changes. I hear a lot of people talking about what can happen next, and people fear that it's going to get worse. Certainly before it gets better, but it's going to get worse. It may never get better. And then I hear a lot of people from both sides of the aisle running to the center of common sense in a way that I have not seen maybe in 15 years. So there is a very big possibility that a turning point could be upon us. And the question will be, what do we do with the opportunity? Significant, important developments earlier today delivered at a Utah press conference with the governor, with the law enforcement, the FBI. Let's listen to it.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We got him. On the evening of September 11th, a family member of Tyler Robinson reached out to a family friend who contacted the Washington County Sheriff's Office with information that Robinson had confessed to them or implied that he had committed the incident. This information was relayed to the Utah County Sheriff's Office and scene investigators at Utah Valley University. This information was also conveyed to the FBI. Investigators reviewed additional video footage from UVU surveillance and identified Robinson arriving on UVU campus in a gray Dodge Challenger at approximately 8:29 a.m. on September 10th, in which he is observed on video in a plain maroon t-shirt, light-colored shorts, a black hat with a white logo, and light-colored shoes. When encountered in person by investigators in Washington County on September 12th, in the early morning hours, Robinson was observed in consistent clothing with those surveillance images. Investigators interviewed a family member of Robinson who stated that Robinson had become more political in recent years. The family member referenced a recent incident in which Robinson came to dinner prior to September 10th, and in the conversation with another family member, Robinson mentioned Charlie Kirk was coming to UVU. They talked about why they didn't like him and the viewpoints that he had. The family member also stated Kirk was full of hate and spreading hate. The family member also confirmed Robinson had a gray Dodge Challenger.
So that is the governor of Utah, Spencer Cox, delivering the news that less than 36 hours later, that the search produced a suspect, and a suspect had been arrested and apprehended. His name's Tyler Robinson. He's a white 22-year-old adult. I mean, certainly he's an adult. And it does seem as though he was radicalized. And I want people to think about right now. I think that the fact that the university system is a part of this story, this very, very tragic story. I don't know anything about Utah Valley University, so I don't know that it was particularly the case there, but I have seen videos of their socialist student group being very hyperbolic about Charlie Kirk. And I think we have to start asking ourselves, where do people who have ideas, who have thoughts, perspectives that differ from other people, where are we encouraging anybody of any walk of life to go to the extent where they internally, mentally justify the actions of what we saw with Tyler Robinson? I think the words from the governor were important today, but there's kind of a afterglow is not the right way to put it because the story is such a tragic story. But weren't we all holding our breath a bit to find out that the suspect, first of all, that they had a suspect, and then second of all, that he'd been caught? We watched Luigi Mangione go execute somebody for a cause that he believed in, and quickly we saw people celebrating afterwards. They still are. They've romanticized a cold-blooded killer in that healthcare industry executive. We're not in a position right now where we got the guy, we move on. We've put close the book on this. Obviously, they're going to prosecute him. I think it's going to be easy to do that. I hope. It's what they seem to suggest. They have a lot of evidence against this guy. But we have to be able to assess what is happening. We have to do it in a way that is non-inflammatory. But I'm going to be honest with you. I don't see a both sides in this issue. I don't see Republicans, conservatives, reacting to the simple sharing of ideas the way the radicalized left does. I don't feel like there are comparative instances where Republicans don't like what Democrats are saying. Charlie Kirk's not an elected official. Not that that would in any way, shape, or form legitimize anything that happened here. He was just a guy who wanted to have a conversation that people were entertained by, intrigued by, motivated by on both sides. Charlie Kirk was just a guy. And I don't see people on the right seeing people on the other side of the political aisle. And folks, Charlie Kirk, I don't care what any stupid publication headline says, Charlie Kirk was not radical. He was not far right wing. He's actually about as normal and mainstream as the right gets. He was sensible. He was kind. He was open. He was non-judgmental. He's exposed right now in the aftermath. People can't even come to say, how many of you guys have seen this? Maybe it's not so many. Maybe you're not seeing in your timelines the people who are like dancing on the grave of Charlie Kirk. But what you're seeing is comments like, oh, you know, I guess we're all going to get really bent out of shape that Charlie Kirk got shot by a gun, or that Charlie Kirk got gunned down. But nobody cares when students in classrooms do. That's absolute abhorrent bologna sausage. Completely top to bottom bullcrap. They can't bring themselves to say, I'm glad he died, which some people are. But I bet you have people right now that you know personally that are close to you who cannot keep inside their hatred and disgust for Charlie Kirk, which we all have kind of understood is if they know that you're of the conservative belief, they probably hate you too. Internally, there's probably something nipping at them saying, gosh, I know they're one of those Charlie Kirk types. But you're seeing people, they're not justifying the murder, but they're trying to unjustify your ability, your right to be disgusted, dismayed, and heartbroken over the fact that Charlie Kirk lost his life. They're trying to diminish it. There are multiple levels to the cultural rot that has existed in our political discourse. That is for certain. But the depravity of those people who cannot look at Charlie Kirk's death, his assassination, and without equivocation say, what have we become? You got to think about those people in your life and ask yourself, what's going on there to put them in such a despondent, disturbed place that they can't look at the life lost of an innocent, he is an innocent man. I don't encourage engaging in these conversations on social media, but here's the question that when they're like, oh, all of a sudden all these conservatives are outraged over Charlie Kirk's death, but were they mad when children sitting in a church pew were gunned down? The answer is hell yes, we were furious. We're still furious. It hasn't stopped. The question back to those people who don't go as far to celebrate his death, but they question the fact that you would be outspokenly saddened by it. The question is, was Charlie Kirk an innocent man? And it's a yes or no question. It's absolutely not a yes, but question. No buts allowed. More came from this press conference earlier. We're going to get to some more of it here in a little bit. But we're going to take a break. We've got a guest coming up next. Ted Dabrowski is going to join us. Big announcement today in the state of Illinois. Ted Dabrowski is going to come on and discuss that with us. He's the president of Wire Points. Previously, vice president and policy and spokesperson for the Illinois Policy Institute, Ted Dabrowski, a guest on the Annie Fry Show for years, many, many times over, is going to join us once again. As the governor of Utah said, we got him. Now the hard work continues, maybe grows, to build a fast and sturdy prosecution of the stone cold killer, this man full of hate. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Annie.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Fry Show. We're excited to have you with us. It's Friday afternoon. We just played in the last segment a clip from that press conference that shows that we do have an arrest in the murder of Charlie Kirk, which is good news, but there's still a lot of work to do, certainly. We're going to cover any breaking news that happens on this story throughout the course of the day. All right, I'm excited to get to our next guest here. Ted Dabrowski joins the Annie Fry Show once again. He is the president of Wire Points. He's also previously vice president of policy and spokesman for the Illinois Policy Institute. Ted Dabrowski, thank you so much for being with us today. It's great to have you here. Can you hear us okay? His mic. I think your mic is muted there.
It was me. It was me. Hey, thanks for having me on. It was me. My fault.
No problem.
But thank you for having me on. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we are very glad to have you. You've been a steady voice in the state of Illinois for quite some time. I know, Ted, you used to come on my show when I was doing Saturdays. And I'm really excited to be a part of this announcement for you. Today was a big day in the state of Illinois for you. Talk to us about an announcement that you made earlier in the morning.
Yeah, so I've announced that I'm running for governor. This state should be a top five state. It should be one of the best states in the country for economic opportunity, for growth, for attracting businesses. And sadly, we're on the other extreme. And today, today I've been talking about my parents. They were immigrants 60 years ago. And when they came here, Illinois and Chicago, they were the beacon of opportunity for everybody. And today people are leaving the state. It's too expensive to live here. There aren't enough good jobs. You know, they're not teaching our kids to read anymore. We have to bring this great state back. It's an amazing state. And you know, I want to fight for everyday Illinoisans to make it the state it should be.
Yeah, you know, I love to hear that. The announcement that you are running for governor, Ted Dabrowski, is on with us right now. I hear you talking about Illinois with a sense of hope in your voice. And I think that the, you know, 40% of our audience that's sitting on the east side of the Mississippi River right now is going, what's this guy talking about? Because a lot of people, especially downstate here in the state of Illinois, feel as though it's hopeless. Why would you spend the time, the effort, the money to try to win this race? Some people think is unwinnable.
No, it's not hopeless. I think it's only hopeless if we say it's hopeless and we act like it's hopeless. You know, this place, I think there's enough people who are disenfranchised over the last 7 years under Governor Pritzker. You know, he's promised to do all kinds of things, but he's got a super majorities all his whole tenure. And yet he's failed to bring down property taxes. He's failed to make schools better. He doubled the gas tax. People are leaving under his watch, population shrinking. You know, he owns this problem. And I think if we can prosecute the case well and say, hey, we can do so much better. I don't know why we should be accepting of the fact that Illinois is kind of a laughingstock in many places. We should be competing with Texas, with Florida, with Tennessee, for growth and opportunity. Look, we got this Chicago, this amazing city that's ready to explode. But right now we're going the wrong way. We're protecting criminals instead of our victims, and we're protecting illegal immigrants over everyday Illinoisans. We've got it all wrong, and I think we should be hopeful to turn this around.
You know, Ted Dabrowski joining us right now just announced his run for Illinois governor as a Republican. You can learn more about him and consider supporting his campaign if you so choose. I want to ask you about the mood in the state of Illinois. Of course, downstate there, it's the state's a pretty red state. But 66-67% of the county or of the state lives in Cook County. My understanding is we need maybe 22%, 25% is a landslide, according to what I've talked about with some Republican committee women across the state of Cook County. You don't have to turn Cook County red. You have to get like a fourth of it. How are you going to achieve that goal to make sure that Cook County goes, you know what? This guy's not that bad. We're going to give him a chance.
Well, yeah. First of all, I chose a lieutenant governor candidate, Dr. Carey, and she's from the suburbs. I think we have to talk to the suburban crowd a lot. And she, you know, she's focused on mental health. She's an ER doctor, 25 years working in safety net hospitals. So she understands a lot of the struggle for people. I also, you know, I'm half Ecuadorian, so I can go speak to the Latin community, the Hispanic community. I'm half Polish. might go give my try at the Polish community. But I think we have to dedicate our time to making sure that the disenfranchised blacks get paid attention to. They've been ignored by Governor Pritzker, especially with the illegal immigration problem. And the Latinos also have not been happy. So we just have to get out there and do our work. But let's not forget Southern Illinois, Central Illinois. They have been forgotten by Governor Pritzker. He even told them the other day they can move out if they want to, you know, instead of listening and respecting them, he told them to move out.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of people to go talk to, Annie. I think the other big thing, let's not forget, Illinois may be run by Democrats, and a lot of that is gerrymandering. But Governor Pritzker only got 54.9% of the vote in the last election. It's not 60% or 65%. So it's not that big of a hurdle if we can organize and bring people together and unify everybody.
So we're speaking with Ted Dabrowski announcing his run for governor in the state of Illinois. He would, of course, love to challenge J.B. Pritzker for that ultimate seat. You'll have to win a primary first. And I find that Illinois cannot find its way out of a paper bag in a Republican primary. I'm just going to tell you from right here, I usually look at the entire field of candidates in the Republican primary and go, all of these people on any day of the week are infinitely better than J.B. Pritzker. But there's a lot of infighting. It seems as though the Illinois Republican Party is listless. It doesn't know where it's going. It knows what it wants to do, but it has no idea how to get there. How do you plan with your candidacy to unite the Illinois Republican Party in a way that actually surmounts a victory?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm qualified to do that because I've been doing this policy work for 15 years. You know, I've been looking at the data, the research, the messaging, and I've worked with everybody from you know, the South, you know, South Chicago all the way to Manteno to East St. Louis to Rockford. I've been everywhere, and I've been working with everybody and building allyships. And I think my chance here is to show that I'm the unifier of the groups. I am not a firebrand. I am a thinker. I'm a I like to engage in well, we'll talk about Charlie probably. I like to engage in conversation. I like to engage in debate and logic of how to make sure that we do the right things. Mm. And you know, there's so much I've seen of good things that go on. I talked today about reading, the great reading results in Bartelso and Aviston, which is not that far away from where you are, Annie. And you know, this is a place that has the best reading results in the state. And they only spend about $8,000 a kid.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of good things to talk about and a lot of good things to replicate. And I think I'm the person that can do that. I've been doing it for a long time. I know how the sausage is made and I know why it smells so bad. And so I think we can work on fixing all those things.
So we're speaking with Ted Dabrowski here. I keep saying his name because I want you all to be looking him up to see if he is somebody you could support. You brought up education here. Now, here's something. This is a point of privilege here because this is my show. And it's a very personal question, but a lot of people listening right now are going to be motivated by your answer. The Big Beautiful Bill passed something that is effectively school choice. And essentially what it does is it allows taxpayers to donate money to scholarship granting entities uh-huh. to help subsidize tuition dollars for kids who want to go to a school of their choice. And my understanding is it's accessible all across the United States.
Every state, if
the state opts into it. And I don't see Governor Pritzker having said anything yet that he is going to allow the taxpayers of the state of Illinois to participate in this system. Is that accurate? And how would you address it?
Yeah, that's accurate. Look, you know, if you look at Illinois education results, Take Black children, for example. Only 9% of Black children across all of Illinois are proficient in math. It's about 20% in reading. And yet Governor Pritzker only brags about graduation rates, but he won't give these kids choices to go to other schools. He and the legislature killed school choice, the small school choice program we had a couple years ago. He should be embracing what's in that Big Beautiful Bill, and he should be leading it, because that school voucher or that education savings account would give families more chances at attending better schools instead of the failing schools we're in now.
Yeah.
But he won't do it. He won't do it because, you know what? It'll be a sign that he's going against the unions. He's going against Trump. He's doing it politically. He can't afford to do it. And that's wrong for Illinoisans.
Yeah. I mean, if the public school system is so great, then guess what, folks? You could still choose the public school system.
Absolutely.
If it's a wonderful school district you live in and you love the public schools, keep on keeping on. But if it's not, wouldn't you like a choice? Right. Ted Dabrowski speaking with us right now. I'm going to talk a little bit about social issues because this mm-hmm. is where I feel like Illinois really gets messed up in their Illinois Republican primary. Ted Dabrowski, I am adamantly pro-life. I also understand, as somebody who's a little bit more keyed in the state of Illinois in politics, that the amount of victory that the Republicans would have to win in the General Assembly for us to outlaw abortion, to make it so that we are more pro-life than the state of Missouri, it's an impossibility. The governor turning red would have to partner up with a red legislature, and we are in a super minority in Republicans in both the Illinois State House mm-hmm. and the Illinois State Senate. Where are you at on social issues? You can speak about any of them that you choose. And the chances of you working with a Republican General Assembly, probably slim to none. How do you govern as a Republican with a supermajority in a General Assembly, or maybe just a simple majority in the General Assembly of Democrats?
You know, it's pretty simple for me. I take a lot of common sense approach that I think most people would take. I think we can all agree that we shouldn't have boys and girls sports. I mean, that's a slam dunk. That should just be outlawed.
Yes.
I also don't believe that we should be teaching DEI and things like, you know, transgenderism in third grade and fourth grade. And that's what's happening right here in my neighborhood up here in Wilmette. They're teaching kids to say, hey, you can be a boy or a girl and you can change it anytime you want. That's not the kind of things that we should be teaching fourth graders. You know, that's something for adults, but not for fourth graders. So these are the kind of things I think we just have to be common sense about it. And I think most people would agree, being a kid is hard enough. Don't confuse them with a lot of the DEI issues that just don't belong in the classroom. You know, and it also doesn't belong, you know, in many places. So we have to get back to good old fashioned common sense policies.
What's a stopgap if you have a Republican governor? I've heard people say, you know, Republican governor's not going to be able to get anything done with all those Democrats in Springfield. What good is a Republican governor if the Democrats control Springfield?
Yeah, no, I tell you that the good thing is, first of all, the bully pulpit to expose things. You know, Governor Pritzker will never say what's wrong in Illinois. He only cheerleads and doesn't tell the truth. He's not willing to tell. He doesn't level up with the people of Illinois. And I say that, you know, he's a population loss denier. He says we're growing when actually the census shows we're shrinking. He says we have record graduation rates when the data shows our kids can't read. It's the same thing over and over. As a governor, Republican governor, you've got the bully pulpit, and you continue to expose. You can expose all that to everyday Illinoisans, and let everyday Illinoisans choose. Do you want to continue on the same path that Governor Pritzker's had us on, or the Democrats with supermajorities, or do you want change? Do you want lower property taxes? Do you want your gas taxes lower? Right, all those things can change if we push it. But it'll be hard. There's no doubt about that. And I think a big part of the bully pulpit is continuing to eat away at Democrats' supermajority control in the state house.
Absolutely. We have the opportunity to do that a little bit here in the 112th district across the river, a blue seat that goes the way of however Chicago tells Katie Stewart to vote. Ted Dabrowski, I want to give you the opportunity to talk about a son of Illinois, Charlie Kirk, who was gunned down this week. It's tragic. It's horrific. And we're asking our audience today on our YouTube poll, which we do each day, is this a turning point for the country? I suspect that you might have met Charlie Kirk a time or two. I'm curious about your relationship with him or your admiration for him and what his legacy means for Republicans, conservatives, moderates, curious Democrats across the country today.
Yeah, I think, first of all, I've been kind of disheartened by a lot of the politicization of his death and his assassination. So I want to respect Charlie for the next few days and just say, look, this young man was doing exactly what we need in America, which is to engage in civil discourse and dialogue. And even more so, it's exactly what we need because we need young people to do that. You know, the older crowd still talks, I think. But the younger crowd, that's our future generation. We need them to engage. And Charlie was trying to do just that, you know, not, you know, unabashed about what he believed in. But it was okay because he would accept what other people said, too. And it's a beautiful thing he was doing. It's something I try to do when I try to just talk with reason, logic, persuasion, use the data. He's going to be missed because he was doing something that we really need. And now you got to wonder whether it's going to just, put the brakes on what he was doing.
Well, last question for you. We're speaking with Ted Dabrowski. He's just announced his run to be the governor of the state of Illinois. He will have to win a Republican primary, and then he will have to defeat J.B. Pritzker, who's seeking out his third term. You know, the things that I guess kings do. J.B. Pritzker puts himself right in there as right. Well. Last question. Ted Dabrowski, do you truly believe you can win this race, and what will you need from Southern Illinois to do it?
You know, I would not enter if I didn't think I could win, although there's some people who could enter just to advance the ball. But I do think we can win. And I this is, again, a great state. And I think if I can persuade people, there's enough hope, there's enough of us to get to 50% plus one, we can take this state back. I really believe that. I wouldn't do it. What do I need from Southern Illinois? We're going to have to unite. And people are going to have to look. There's a primary. And people are going to have to decide who is a uniter. Because if we don't unite the Republicans, it will just be fractioned again. So who's the uniter? Who knows the issues? You know, who's been doing this for a long time, not as a politician, but I've done this as a, I don't want to say an activist, I've done this as somebody who's worked with so many people across the state. Who can put all this together? Who knows what they want? Who knows how to talk about it and persuade the center left? Because we're going to have to get some independents and center left Democrats. We have to persuade them. And I think I'm the person to do that. And I would love to work with the Southern Illinoisans and Central Illinoisans to the best I can.
Well, the website is tedforillinois.com, tedforillinois.com. I want to encourage everybody listening right now, and I'm telling you folks in Missouri, you would be better served by a more competitive Illinois, certainly, if we had even an ounce of common sense down here. I implore the state of Illinois to invest heavily on the east side of the river here. There's
absolutely
so much opportunity,
yeah.
And St. Louis is dropping the ball, and we've got the beautiful view of downtown St. Louis on the east side. Let's do something with it. I think there's a lot of people hungry right now for common sense. It doesn't have to be red or blue. It just has to be something where we can all look at the common thing together and say, yeah, we're going to do something different here. And Ted, I hope that you have a very successful campaign. I'm looking forward to watching
it. Annie.
We hope you'll stay close.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye. TedForIllinois.com is the website. You know, I think there are maybe a couple other people who have announced or are about to announce, and we will work to bring them on the show when they do, or they reached out to us. His people reached out to us to come on, and we were glad to do that. I always kind of hold my breath going into the primary season because, like, once you pop that balloon, you can't put it back together, and you're all in. But I will say that Ted Dabrowski has been at this for a really long time, and this guy is a numbers guy. And if the state of Illinois needs something, it's financial, fiscal, common sense, responsibility, knowledge. And I'm really kind of ready for somebody to go take over that job and be somebody who's just going to get the job done. Yeah, they got to win. Yeah, they're going to have to rally the troops. But I don't need to be riled up. The state of Illinois is disgusted with the way that J.B. Pritzker is running things. We have to put up a candidate that can be palatable enough for not just the Republicans, the 44% of the state of Illinois that voted for Donald Trump. We have to be looking at someone who's palatable enough for those people in the middle or those Republicans who wouldn't vote for Donald Trump to show up and say, enough of this Pritzker stuff. Let's try the other guy. Maybe Dabrowski is that guy for you. We'll continue to watch his campaign and see if he's the guy for us. Let's take a quick break. More Annie Fry Show next.
When I heard it, I was in the midst of, you know, building a great, for 150 years, they've wanted a ballroom at the White House, right? They don't have a ballroom. They have to use tents on the lawn for President Xi when he comes over. If it rains, it's a wipeout. And so I was with the architects and with design. It's going to be incredible. And they came in, they said, Charlie Kirk is dead. I didn't know what they meant. I said, what do you mean dead? Charlie Kirk was shot. And they thought he was dead because it was so horrific, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said, dead? You got... And it was like, I just told these people, get out, just go. You got it. This is the worst thing. This was so bad for our country. When I heard it, I was in the midst of, you know, building a great... For 150 years, they've wanted a ballroom at the White House, right? They don't have a ballroom. They have to use tents on the lawn for President Xi when he comes over. If it rains, it's a wipeout. And so I was with the architects and with design. It's going to be incredible. And they came in. They said, Charlie Kirk is dead.
When you listen to President Trump telling that story and he says how he heard the news that Charlie Kirk had passed away, that he'd been shot, it's very clear that he, you know, these are the type of human moments where you look at Donald Trump and you realize that the prestige of the presidency, the allure of all of, you know, the separation that somebody who's a president of the United States, I think we do this with celebrities as well. Like, you just feel like they're different. They live different lives. They experience things differently than we do. And when someone says that, tells you that someone has died, people say, what do you mean he died? I mean, there's really no two ways about that. A death is a death. But this tragedy is so jarring that even the president of the United States, of course, would hear that and go, well, you know, run that by me again. That doesn't seem right. They do have the suspect in custody, and the assassin had quite a bit of backstory that was very, like, Antifa associated, very politically counter what the Charlie Kirk turning point conservative message would be. It was obvious that there was an issue politically with Charlie Kirk. Here's the governor of Utah.
That had been engraved on casings found with the rifle. Inscriptions on a fired casing read, notices, bulges, capital O-W-O, what's this question mark? Inscriptions on the three unfired casings read, hey fascist, exclamation point, catch, exclamation point, up arrow symbol, right arrow and symbol, and three down arrow symbols. A second unfired casing read, Oh, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Bella Chow, Chow Chow. And a third unfired casing read, if you read this, you are gay, LMAO.
That's the governor talking about some of what they knew initially about the suspect. I'm not really a big fan of whataboutism, but I absolutely know what the left would be doing right now if there were some sort of hyper right wing. And I don't even know, like, this is the difference. Isn't this the difference between the activist left and the activist right? When you have people who label people label like racism as something that is far right wing. And I disavow that as a truth. I don't believe. I will publicly say that if you are espousing racist comments, I disavow that as something that would be a part of a party that I would support. I don't think that the Republican Party in any way, shape, or form is racist. I don't think they've ever been racist. If you've studied, you know, the KKK, if you studied Jim Crow, if you've studied the Civil War, you know that the Republican Party is not the party historically of racism in America. It's just not. It's just the truth. I'm not even going to argue past that. If you want to argue that the KKK belongs to the Republican Party, you are uneducated and you need to study. It has been a political movement in the Democratic left. But I also don't think that the current Democratic Party is intentionally racist. So maybe what we have is racists who are in the Democrat Party. And yes, maybe they're racists who say that they're in the Republican Party. There used to be a time where we used to be able to point at those people and just call them a-holes. And not the party of the opposite opinion that I can now utilize and amplify somebody who's an a-hole racist for my political gain. So you amplify this hatred behavior. Shouldn't we isolate it? Shouldn't we maroon it to some island where they get zero attention for their hateful, bigoted views? I don't see people in the Democrat Party standing up right now and disavowing the activist views of maybe just a few tiny people who want to ascribe themselves to the Democrat Party. I don't see them, you know, when it comes to the Gaza issue. I don't see them trying to disavow as a party those types of ancillary, hateful, bigoted views. It just kind of sits there and festers. There's probably a lot more that we agree on in the middle. There's probably a lot more that we could debate over and compromise on in the middle. And those things that are in the fringe, the parties themselves should call it out. And I've seen the Republican Party call it out. I've seen the Republican Party push it out. And I haven't seen the Democrat Party push it out. So now's the time. And there's an opportunity. There are some people who are doing that. The question is, do you do it from within the party or do you leave the party? I didn't leave the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party left me. The YouTube live chat poll for today, is this the turning point for the country? Yes for the better, yes for the worse, no, nothing changes. Birthday boy Ethan, what do you say?
A very hopeful yes for the better, right? My fear is that, you know, here's the sad part, is it takes one person for all of a sudden it to be yes for the worse.
Yeah.
It takes one person. And we know that there are, we know there's radicals. We know that there's radicals on both sides. And I fear that the large, large, large majority can say, no, this is not right. But it just takes one for all of a sudden everything to go from a, in large part, united message of, yes, we need to change. We need to move forward. We need to remember Charlie. And we need to you know, fill that void together. It takes one person to try and break all that apart and divide everyone further than ever.
We want to know what you think about this as well. Annie Fry YouTube live chat poll for today. Is this the turning point for the country? Yes for the better, yes for the worse, or no, nothing changes? Come vote, leave a comment. We're going to read your comments here throughout the course of the show. When we come back, you filling in for the B or not the B?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Ryan Wiggins.
Buckle up.
Ryan Wiggins is out, turns the reins over to Ethan. We'll get to that next. Don't go away.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Bee or Not the Bee.
Looks like you didn't put a snarky Ethan Bee or Not the Bee Wiggins American there.
He didn't make one.
He's maybe he's showing some mercy.
Slacking. No, he's slacking.
That's probably
he hadn't
more
thought
accurate.
About it, but if he does think about it next time, brace yourself.
Oh, God.
It's the disappointing. That is my favorite part of the normal Wiggins America one.
All right, shall we get started with the Bee or Not the Bee?
Ready when you are.
I guess I should probably explain what it is to those that have never heard it before. This is a segment, like I said, titled The Bee or Not the Bee, where I read a story and you, the listener, have to decide if it is real or if it is satire from the Babylon Bee. So we go ahead and we start with this one. Tough on crime Democrats propose 100 strikes and you're outlaw.
Tough on crime Democrats, 100 strikes and you're out. It's kind of believable. I'm going to say B.
It's the B.
It is indeed the B. Facing heavy criticism for going easy on violent criminals, a group of Democrats sought to prove that they are tough on crime by proposing a bold new 100 strikes and you're out law. The new initiative brought forward by Democrats was praised by media outlets as a step in the right direction to hold violent, murderous criminals accountable after they have brazenly committed 100 horrific acts against innocent victims. And then even Chuck Schumer's quoted here saying, at some point, enough is enough.
Mm. At some point.
You know, there's a lot of those.
You know, it's more than 14.
There's
15th time's a charm?
There is a lot of those with the B. Right, that just feel like they could easily be real.
Yeah.
That's one of them, unfortunately.
Yeah.
On to the next one. Annual Wikipedia fundraiser says for just $2.75, you can help them censor truth.
That sounds real.
Read it one more time.
Annual Wikipedia fundraiser says for just $2.75, you can help them censor truth.
That's the B.
You said real, Annie?
I did.
All right. It is the B. Out of San Francisco, California, what a shocker there, internet users were given another rare opportunity to play a role in the dissemination of agenda-driven misinformation as the annual Wikipedia fundraiser said that for just $2.75, you could help them censor the truth. The popular user-edited Encyclopedia Online announced its yearly pledge drive, telling visitors to the website that for just that small donation, they too could have a hand in altering facts and deleting accurate information for users around
the
globe.
Actual pop-up on Wikipedia, I didn't catch this truth part at the end of that, so I get it, the B. The internet, we were promised an important update for readers in the United States. This is just Wikipedia.org. You deserve an explanation, so please don't skip this one-minute read. Reading it for everybody, Wiki. If you've lost count of how many times you visited Wikipedia this year, we hope that means it's given you at least $2.75 of knowledge. If so, please join the 2% of readers who give to keep this resource available for all. Later on, it says, if you are undecided, remember most readers don't donate. So any contribution helps, and monthly gifts are the best option for a lasting impact. So if Wikipedia provides you with $2.75 of knowledge, please donate today. It's funny that they don't ever say, like, wait here before I make that accusation. By visiting Wikipedia today, you're choosing a free and fair internet, a space to find facts you need without the discretion of ads or the facts you need. If that's not the subtitle for the Democrat Party right now, the facts you need, Wikipedia.
Pretty accurate.
I want to donate $2.75 to Babylon Bee today.
The next one, illegal aliens attempt to flee ICE by climbing fence around CIA.
Could be true. I'm going to go real again, giving it a shot.
Brad?
B.
It is real.
Okay.
This is a real story.
Right.
ICE conducted a raid at a construction site near the CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia. And in the scatter from the construction site, some of the invaders decided it would be a good idea to hop a nearby fence. Little did they know, apparently, or maybe they did at the time. I don't know. but it happened to be a fence that was meant to keep people out of the CIA headquarters.
Oh. Oop, wrong fence.
From from NBC News, it says, trying to evade the ICE officers who arrived at the building site, some construction workers ran towards the CIA headquarters and tried to climb the ring of fences that surround the complex. As a precaution, the CIA temporarily shut down access to the agency to check whether the perimeter of the campus was secure. The workers who tried to scale the fences did not breach headquarters security or pose any threat, the source said. It's kind of ironic. For a couple of reasons. On to the next one.
On to the next one.
Let's see. We got another minute here. Okay. Democrats warn surveillance videos perpetuate stereotypes by accurately depicting events.
That's maybe a B headline about like reality, which is what they all are.
Mm-hmm.
The B?
It is indeed the B. As national discourse continued to be centered around highly publicized violent crimes perpetrated on innocent victims, Democrats warned that surveillance videos perpetuate stereotypes by accurately depicting events.
All right. Well, thank you, Ethan, for filling in on the B or not the B. Here's what we're going to do in the next hour. We are going to take listener calls on the YouTube live chat poll. Is this the turning point for the country? Yes, for the better. Yes, for the worse. Or no, nothing changes. We want to know what you think. 314-241-9797. 314-241-9797. Hold your place in line. We'll be back in about 5 minutes from right now with your phone calls. Don't go away.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.